Mr. Hunter, Reel 2, you were just saying you had to do everything for this disorganizing.
Yeah, for Hankins. And in being that way, you couldn't. We tried bullying him, we tried to get him through. He's such a heavy lad, he could never climb the rope or get over the wall. Always had to have somebody behind to shove him up and push him over. And that's how we used to get through. Daisy Albright used to do the washing and doing the socks, and we'd cover her as best as we could, and everybody called her her. Even everybody, like I said, the officer and the sergeant, all called her her. She'll come into my story a little bit later on. Again, a bit sorry, and again funny, and then at the end, it'll be very tragic. It ended up very tragically. That's the old boy.
Well, let's go on from Quebec Barracks, Northampton. What happened after that?
After Quebec Barracks, it was Blenheim Camp at Bury St. Edmunds. Continuation training, we were informed that we were going to Malaya. And we got introduced to a new outfit. Now, I must say there was a complete contrast from the six-week training to the 10 weeks, because we had a new organisation. We had a new officer, we had a new sergeant major, we had a new sergeant, we had new PT instructors, and they were entirely different. The sergeant was a terrific guy. Sergeant Mole, his name was. He used to talk with a lisp. Everybody used to take Mickey. He said, here's a persistent. You know, he's a persistent lad. Here's a persistent. Or here's a situation. You know, he had a little bit of a funny expression about it. And me and Alan and Sandland and them used to really take the Mickey. Behind his back, obviously. He had a big walrus moustache. But he's a terrific guy. And he used to say, you're going into action. Make sure you survive when you go into action. He said, and if you don't, he said, it's my fault. He said, because I'm not teaching you right. He said, you've got to learn. You've got to know how to do it. You've got to be able to strip that brand gun down with your eyes shut and put it together again. He said, and even fire it in the right direction. He says, you've got to do it blindfolded. And he says, you've got to learn how to lay booby traps, how to lay mines, how to dig them up, how to disarm them. And he taught us very, very well how to use a bayonet, how to use your rifle if you haven't got your bayonet fixed as a weapon. And he was pretty good. He was a survivor because he had survived the First World War.
The Second World War.
The Second World War. Yeah. He survived that, and he'd seen action. And he knew what that was all about. And he was right in what he said, because when we did go into action, we benefited from the people that taught us. But the ironic thing about it was, when we finished our training there, we did grenade training, we did earth jungle training. We still did our PT, but they were mostly runs and route marches. You know, you might have a 12-mile route march or a 24-mile route march, you know, pardon me, which you had to complete. And if you didn't complete your 12-mile route march, you probably won't be alone. You would have there'd be another four or five there. They would be taken out the next day, and they'd have to do that 12 miles until they did that. And the same with 24. I can remember on the 24, I did mine, and I had blood coming through the welts of my boots. And on a 24-mile route march, you do have one or two stops. And I knew if I took my boots off, I'd never get them back on again. Yeah. But But I had to finish that 24 mile. I thought, I can't face doing this again. So I had to do it.
This is all round West Suffolk.
Pardon?
This is all round West Suffolk.
All round Thetford and that way. There used to be I think I saw that. There is a battle, they call a battleground there somewhere. And that's where we done most of our training. Simulated buildings and all different things. And camouflage, mostly. And how to move through undergrowth and stuff like that without making noises. But you can't compare a woods in the UK to a jungle in Malaya, because in a way would that be the same. But we never got to Malaya. We finished our 10-week training. We all got through, even Hankins and Daisy Albright. They all got through. I can't say that I can remember Daisy doing a lot of the training, but I can remember she was on the route marches. Yeah. I can't remember being in the grenade range with her and stuff like that. Because you're sitting in the trench, and that actually happened. The guy pulled, what did he call it? He was left-handed. Oh, sure. Well, something happened anyway. He pulled the pin, and the sergeant said, throw it. And he did. He threw the pin. And the sergeant grabbed his hand like that, and he opened his hand, and the clip went, and the sergeant picked the hand and threw like that, and pulled him down in the trench. And he grabbed his hand. If he only grabbed his hand, he'd have dropped that grenade on the floor, and that would have been a job to pick it up. These were 5-second fuses.
Was this Daisy or another fella?
No, this was another fella. I think it was. But it actually happened. Yeah, the sergeant grabbed his hand like that. The pin went, and he just picked the grenade up, threw it over the trench, and pulled him down. Yeah? Well, we were all back in another trench.
So you were just telling me you'd finished this period at Blenheim Camp.
Yeah. Now, I used to hitchhike home from there to Lowestoft. Well, obviously, it saved money. Just get a weekend, 36 hours or 48 hours. And I say, I don't. Had a fella in the Suffolk who was stationed at Gibraltar Barracks. It's just down the road from Blenheim Camp. I think Gibraltar Barracks is still there, but Blenheim Camp's all been pulled down and there's an estate built on there now. And I used to go up to Gibraltar Barracks and wait. His name is Charlie Barker. We used to hitchhike home together. And we got a lift in a sports car one day. And I was pushed in the back in this little tiny seat. Charlie was in the front with his driver. And when we got in, he said, I'm going to Beckles, which is just up the road from here. About 6-8 miles more. And the driver only had one arm. And he was letting go of the steering wheel to change gear. And my word, did he drive that car. He went like a bullet, all the way to Beckles. Ah. I was imagining he was probably in the Second World War or something, lost his arm. I've never seen a man drive a car like that before. What's so fast? Never be home and next time I know. At the same time, when we'd finished our 10-week training, we were then waiting for the posting to go to Malaya. And it was coming up for Christmas. Where are we now? We're in May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December. Well, a few weeks out here somewhere, aren't I? 6, 10 weeks. That must have been November, September. October or November. I came home on leave. I'd Been home for 3 days, and a policeman knocked on the door. Since you pulled the hunter? I says, yeah. You've got to get back to camp straight away. I says, I can't get back to camp. I says, just about to sit down at tea. Oh, he says, you can have your tea, he says, but you've got to get back to camp and you've got to be there tonight. He says, we've got a police car taking you and two others as far as this. He says, there'll now be an army wagon at this. We should take to Glen Camp. So I had my tea and they picked me up, Willie, and a fellow named George Orvey. Took us a disc on his army lorry and we went to Glen Camp. And what's all this about? Pack up all your gear, get all your gear in the kit bags, get your rifles and your tin hats and all your gear. And we were on the lorries and we'd driven up to London. And into London, we went down underground into a big underground camp with all iron beds, hundreds of them, rows and rows of them. The lorries went underground as well. Never did see outside. Got on a bed, and then they said that you're now going down to Southampton in the morning and you'll be boarding a boat. And all night long we were there playing cards and drinking tea and writing letters. There was lorries coming in, bringing more and more men. And there was thousands of men down there. The next morning we rolled up more in a single file and all of these lorries. And went down to Southampton and got on a boat called...
Don't worry about the name of the boat. It doesn't really matter.
I can't remember the boat now.
No, don't worry about that.
Anyway, on top this troop ship. And the troop ship was filled right up. So now how many men you got on a troop ship, I wouldn't hazard a guess on that. But they were running the thousands. And we were stashed in there like sardines. And we took off from Southampton. And we were told on the boat that we were going to Malaya.
Were you still in the Northamptonshire Regiment?
No, we'd been transferred to the Suffolks. After our 6 weeks, we were transferred to the Suffolks. Sorry, the Norfolks. And done a basic continuation training. On the boat was Norfolks, going to Malaya. We couldn't go through the Suez Canal. Because they'd had a lot of trouble there and they'd sunk all the boats in the Suez Canal and blocked it. So we had to go around. We had 6 hours leave at Colombo. And then the next port call, and we didn't see another port until we got to Singapore. And then we got all our gear together, packed all our gear up, and he announced over the tannoy that we would not be stopping at Singapore. We're going on to Hong Kong. But you can have 6 hours leave in Singapore. And you can report back to the boat at such and such a time, and you're going on to Hong Kong. So we didn't wind up in Malaya. We went to Hong Kong. We got to Hong Kong, we was taken to a little place called Fan Ling. It don't exist now. They tell me it's a golf course. There now. But there's a little village called Fan Ling, I recall. And we were attached to the Middlesex Regiment. And then we started extra training. Mountain climbing. Running up hills and running down hills. How to tackle gear from one. I'm talking about when I say a hill, I'm talking about 3,000 or 4,000 feet high, you know, and there's some mountains around Hong Kong. So they're fantastic places once you go up the top, but getting up the top, try and make you run up these, you couldn't run, it's just impossible. You just couldn't make ground. You got to the top and the sergeant and the officer said, well, that wasn't good enough, you'll have to do it again, and down you go and start again. And we used to do this in the mornings at dinner time, 12 o'clock, you had to pack up because blokes were dropping with heat exhaustion. It was so hot, you know. And we did all that training there. And he says, you're doing the mountain climbing and the mountain training because, he says, you're going to wind up in Korea. So we were told. We just had the ice cream man come around. I must tell you that. They used to have a three-wheel bicycle. It was like a refrigerator on the front. Walls used to happen years ago before the war. Yeah, in this country. And they were the same things. And they used to come round the camp. And there were several of them. All had the different names and the nicknames. And the ice cream man's here, and he'd have chocolate bars, Mars bars, lollies, ice cream, chop ices. And he used to get it on tick and play at the end of the week. And an ice lolly or chop ice, and he used to put your name in the book. His little book, Chinaman. And pay the money in the end. Anyway, but there was a lot of trouble over it. We were called on parade one day, and the CO came out, and he's standing on this big platform, and he said, I've got the ice cream man's book here, and he said, I want these men to step forward. He says, I want to see Private Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Charlton Heston, all these film star names, he said, I want these people to come forward and pay their bills. And they've been fiddling the poor Chinaman. So he done away with tick in the end. That was a laugh, that was.
Did they own up?
Pardon?
Did they own up?
A lot of them did, yeah. A lot of them did. But one or two didn't, though, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah, buggers in there. But it used to be hot. Terribly hot. Their summer is equivalent. Well, their winter is equivalent to our summer, you know. And that used to be terrible. But 12 o'clock, we used to go down to Fanling, put a pair of shorts on. You had to wear a shirt because you weren't allowed to go around naked. You had to wear your hat, providing you were reasonable. You know, a pair of shorts, and we used to go down to Fanling. This particular day, I decided to go down to Fanling, asking the lads who got it. Goes in, no, we're going to lay here under the mozzie net. I said, oh, fair enough. Because you had the old Barcelona fans in the barracks. I said, I'm going to Fanling and bottle up here and I'll come back. And I'm walking down to Fanling, it's a straight road, paddy fields left and right. And then one bloke come towards me, he was 2-3 inches high. He was that far away. Straight road. And we got closer and closer and closer. And I stopped dead when we were face to face. And it was John Lee. I sat next to him at school. And met him 11,000 miles away from home. Bumped into him like that. I couldn't believe him. I said, where are you then? He says, I'm down the road there. Stationed down there with the RURs. Royal Ulster Rifles. I said, blimey. And we went, he came back to Fanling with me and we had a couple of bottles of beer. He went his way back to the RURs and I went back to Blount Camp and I never met him at all after that. We used to do an OP, observation post, a place called Sandy Peak. That's on the borders of Hong Kong and Communist China. And when you look over the Sandy Peak, the mountains, ranges, and they're higher, there's a big camp down now with the Chinese army camp. They deliberately built that there, so not on that. We've got an observation post on Sandy Peak. They knew that. As they used to go charging out the gates with the rifles above their heads, you know, on a run in the morning and back again. And everybody had a go at that Sandy Peak. Yeah. And when you'd done your term up with the Chinese, watching the Chinese and on this border patrol observation post, you might have another job to go out with Hong Kong police or something like that. I never got that, because there was always smuggling between Communist China and Hong Kong. Probably still going on anyway. But what we did go on was we were called out one day on riot. There was a big riot in Hong Kong. And when we got there, all spaced out in the road, these big banners coming down the road with a picture of Churchill, because he was still alive then, with a big Chinese sword stuck through him. All in colour, you know, and they coming down there. What it was all about the imperial regime or whatever, I don't know. But that was, I can always remember that. And you had to keep these guys back. They had shields and batons and stuff like that. And we pushed them back up this road. And eventually they just burst.
Was there any violence?
There was a bit. Well, a scuffle here and there, but nothing to speak about.
How many of these demonstrators were there?
Oh, there was hundreds of them. Hundreds of them. But Hong Kong was a different place then. All in the harbour used to be what they call sandpans and junks and little boats that people lived on. Well, they cleared all that now. That's all been cleared and cleaned up. And they're all in flats and high-rise buildings now. But they cleared them all up. Tore the boats out from the water and destroyed them.
But was anybody injured?
On the riot? Not on our side, no. I think there's one or two Chinese got injured, but...
Where were they trying to march to?
I don't know where they were going. No, nobody said anything to us. We were down near the... We were the Kowloon side of the Hong Kong, on the mainland, because Hong Kong is a place of an arms war thing, you know. You got Kowloon, and you got Hong Kong. And we were down at the end of this road, but went to the ferry. And whether they were going to try and get across, I don't know. But we'd driven back up the road, but that was the only road I went on. There was more riots, but we never did see them.
This must have been the early part of 1952, by the sound of it.
Yeah. It was, that's a very nice place, Hong Kong. And apart from that riot, I never see any problem with the Chinese. Not as such, at the time, you know. I mean, they were... They're friendly enough when we used to go to Chinese restaurants, and we used to, I saw an old boy one day we were walking down the main street, and he came out and set fireworks off on the pavement, and I nearly stepped on him, and I thought, oh, blimey, what's he up to? And there was a woman laying on the floor, and I walked over to help the woman, and this other bloke pulled me off. He said, no, don't you go near her. She's now going to have a baby. I said, what, on the pavement? He said, well, you mustn't interfere. And he went to walk away. And he was setting fireworks off. That's all he was interested in. I said, what's the idea of the fireworks? He said, well, he's frightening the evil spirits away. He frightened the evil spirits away first, so she can have that baby. And she had that baby on the pavement.
Did you see her having it?
Huh?
Did you see her having it?
No, we were taken away. The bloke told us to get out of it.
Was it a Chinese man who told you to move away?
No, it was an Englishman. Yeah, civilian. whether he's a policeman or not, I won't let you say, but if he is civilian clothes, yeah, he said, well, unless you interfere. Yeah. Well, yeah, they were. They're very hard people. They're very callous people, too. Very callous race.
In what way?
They'd just as well eat you as look at you, sort of thing, you know. They wouldn't hesitate. They don't hesitate to do anything. And where we keep dogs as pets, they keep them to eat. You know, they buy us puppies and feed them up and then kill them and eat them. You know, us, we think that's wrong, but they think that's right, see. Yeah. They won't think nothing of killing anybody because that's not against their religion. And to die as a soldier or as a martyr or whatever they are, or tongs or these different organisations, what they've got, that's an honour for them. Probably hard to believe, but they are. Very weird people. But again, do we find good and bad amongst them? Because you have got Christian Chinese as well. And we come across one or two that were Christians. Even in Korea, we've got Christian faith. But having done that in Hong Kong, we were told that our next stop would be Japan. And we'd go to Japan, and we would have to go to a battle school. And what they meant by a battle school was that conditions are as if you are in battle. So we boarded another boat in Hong Kong and wound up, docked at a place called Kure, Japan.
Was that where the battle school was?
No. The battle school was about 30, 40 miles away. A place called Haramura. Well, we went to this camp, this, say, the Japanese Reinforcement Base Depot. JRBD camp, of course. And, we were stationed at this camp for a few weeks, done a normal training, carried on training and keep fit and rifle range and stuff like that, you know, always busy. And then went to battle school for 14 days. And 14 days and 14 nights. And when you get there, you go to bed in a proper barrack room, and when you get up the next morning, you go on the exercise, and you're on the exercise for 14 days and 14 nights. You dig trenches,